spacious skies for amber.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America. Well, we're not going to put out the telephone numbers right now. We'll put them out later if we want some calls. We have this on the line, Carl Tykrib, and we're going to be talking about not only the move towards the one world government, but the spiritual forces which energize this movement. And that is, of course, what most people miss. They talk about this move towards the new world order, and they talk about the security and a prosperity partnership, and they talk about the move towards the European Union and the of course the American Union here, but they never get into the fact that this is simply a physical manifestation, a political manifestation of powerful spiritual forces. One of the few people who really writes well about this, and I've enjoyed so much of what he's written for Gary Caw and others for the August Review, is our guest, Carl Tykrib. Carl, how did you get involved in studying this sort of esoteric philosophy?
Well, good afternoon or good evening, whatever time zone your listeners and yourself may be in, Dr. Monteith. It's a pleasure being back with you. Interesting question. Back in the late 1980s, early 1990s, I was involved in just various studies. I had gone through finishing off some college, and I was, as a young Christian, and studying different aspects of my faith. And it was about 91 or so when I was involved in a small community-run health organization. I come from a very rural part of Manitoba, Canada, and my community that I was involved with had this special program for senior citizens in my hometown. It turned out that everybody on my board, everyone who was the part of the board of directors, the people writing the checks and so on, they were either involved in Freemasonry or one of the other affiliated lodges in my little community. Now, my community was only 800 people large, or small, however you want to look at that, and we had five affiliated lodges and a Masonic lodge as well. And so there was intense pressure put on myself to join the lodge. And it was intense, not only for the fact that the people writing my checks were the one pushing it, but they were really focusing on the idea that here I was a young person working in the community, I was involved in some of the politics of how my small town operated, and anybody who had any type of business significance in our little town was a member of the lodge, and so they understood that that was the place to be for my little community. Well, I didn't know anything, Dr. Monteith, about Freemasonry, nothing really of any significance, until one of the board members, I think in an act of desperation, probably trying to appease some suspicions of mine, made a very interesting statement. He said to me, he said, "Carl, we're not Satanists." And at that point, warning bells are going off. Talk about getting the cat curious. I had no reason to even suspect Freemasonry because I knew nothing about it.
Right, and but why would anybody say we're not Satanists? Is somebody suggesting they are, or thinks they'll protest too loudly?
Exactly right. And so I thought to myself, what have you been accused of? And it was time to do some hard, hard research.
All right, fine. Well, when we get back with Carl, why we're going to be evaluating this this incredible story of really, we're very fortunate to have somebody on who's as well-versed in these issues as is Carl Tykrib. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Carl Teichribbin. And Carl, of course, is a Canadian. He's done a great deal of work here in the United States. But right now he's back up in Canada. And so he does a great deal of research and studying. I've read it with amazement and with a great deal of pleasure many of the articles he's written for our good friend Gary Caw, and the articles he's written for the August Review. That's, of course, Patrick Wood's organization. We had Patrick on yesterday. But Carl was telling us how he got started, and I'd never heard this story. Apparently he came from a small town in Manitoba with about 800 people in it. He was active in the community, and there were five Masonic lodges. So most of the people, the leaders of the community, belonged to the Masons, and he was encouraged to become involved with Masonry. And then when one of the men who was approaching him and encouraging him to join, I said to him, well, I want you to know that we're not Satanists. Why the bells and whistles went off, and Carl began to wonder what this was all about. So pick up the story there, Carl.
Certainly. It was... For myself, it was a real shock as to why this gentleman would raise up such an interesting or a very disturbing comment, such as "We're not Satanists." And like I said, it played in my head. Talk about bells going off with wondering, what have you been accused of? So over the course of a few years, I ended up very slowly gathering as much documentation as I could on Freemasonry. Principally reading through materials like Albert Pike's Morals and Dogma, a number of volumes written by Manly P. Hall, Albert Mackey. The list was long, and I ended up building a very extensive library of Masonic and then hence occultic and Rosicrucian and Hermetic studies. And it was amazing how it came to a point where it was just like a floodgate opened up, and so much material was simply kind of coming to the forefront of senior citizens in our community who would pass away, and they would have Christian family who would all of a sudden have a box of this material, wouldn't know what to do with it. And I had heard through the grapevine, and I understand in my small town, it's either everybody knows everybody's business, and so it didn't take long, and a number of people understood that, okay, you could come to Carl and give him some of this type of literature. And I ended up building up a fairly extensive library out of Eastern Star material, Freemasonry, and a number of other co-related organizations.
And of course there are many co-related organizations. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Carl is basically telling us how, in this small town where he was, he began to research the background, not only of Masonry, but of the many occult organizations, because there are other cult organizations. As you begin to get into Rosicrucianism and Theosophy, certainly the alchemy and the Hermetic studies, these have been around for a long time. And so many of these are secret or semi-secret organizations that the average individual has no idea exist, or their influence on every aspect of our education, on our lives, and determining not only what the American people read and hear, but ultimately what they believe. So pick up this story there.
Well, the one key factor that I found as I was studying and going through this material, you understand quite well what it's like to sit down and go through Blavatsky's material or Pike's material. Sometimes it's a little overwhelming as you're digging into some of this esoteric writing.
And of course, it's so hard to figure out what they're really saying unless you know the key, because it is written intentionally to confuse you. And even Albert Pike will admit that the writings and everything that the Mason is told is to deceive him. And only as time goes by will he be able to figure out what it's really all about.
And that's so true. And so for somebody like myself coming into this, it was mind-boggling as to where to even begin. And as I was I ended up talking to a number of Masons about it, and I had a number of Masons, former Masons who still had affiliations with the Lodge, and active Masons who were saying, well, you know, Carl, it's how you interpret it. And I've read a number of Masonic apologetics writers who will say the same thing. It's all how you look at this. It's how you spin this. It's how you want to interpret it. Okay, I'll play by those rules. I have no problem playing by those rules. I therefore choose to interpret Freemasonry the same way that Albert Pike interpreted it, or Manly P. Hall, or any of the other prominent Masonic historians and philosophers. Now, when you start playing by the same rules they want you to play by, very quickly, a wall goes up, and no, we don't want to interpret it like that. We want to interpret it as a society that just makes good men better. But the bottom line, though, Dr. Monteith, and many of your readers or listeners know this, is that throughout Freemasonry and throughout societies, is this. We have a spirituality, God, and a chapter 3, where he tells Eve that eat of the fruit, you will surely not die. And that essentially is, we're going right back to the big, you have the or any of those similar terms. And that's really of it. It's a universal religion that believes that all religions have equal validity.
But of course, did you ever run into this idea that there are two gods? There's a superior God, and then there's a lesser God that made the heaven and the earth.
Yes.
Or of course, there were, you know, in the Garden of Eden, there was the demon. And he was the one, of course, who told Adam and Eve not to eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And then there was the angel of light who told them to go ahead and eat, and that set them free. And,
yeah.
And of course, they seem to have this idea of two gods: one is superior God, and then the other.
Concept of being your own deity, or that you are somehow cosmically into this to it. I remember Dalai Lama of Tibet came to Indianapolis, and they had Chalakakra rituals and different coming. And of course, being 1999, it's right before Y2K. And he was explaining about Y2K. Because he had, as a deity, he had seen things come and go. And millenniums after millennium, it didn't matter because he had basically transcended all of that.
And he was suggesting he was thousands of years old.
He was suggesting he was God.
Right.
That's the bottom line. And then he complained about his poor eyesight, his thick glasses, the pimples on his face, and he had representing him for protection. And pardon me, but I don't mean to be disrespectful. That kind of a lame has to worry about glasses. Send your personal problems. Of course, he just
idea that, of course, you was like, if we work hard enough, we can become his God, but or associated with a God. But of course, they do recognize that there is another deity, don't they?
Yes. Well, I thought to myself, why did you fly here? Couldn't you just will yourself here? And of course, it remains that the dog, then anything claiming to be a god, who will stand someday before the one true God? The planet and through all. But these individuals do not see it that way. vase bring about a new order of the ages, where some global spirituality, this global idea of religion, will work part and parcel with how we order our civilization.
And, of course, we find their emblem on the back of the dollar bill, and they will deny that their emblem, but they're not telling the truth. The pyramid with the all-seeing eye, at least, it has been used by Masons, although it long predated Masonry, modern-day Masonry, didn't it? Doesn't it really come from the ancient mystery religions, which is what Masonry is the current manifestation of?
That's right. It's not a new symbol. Most of I believe it was a 20-article series at one point in time. Most of it's on the web. Some of it's posted on Barrett's site. Occult symbology. Most of this goes back centuries and centuries, millennium. It's not new, but in our new, we are resurrecting. We're putting them not on the bill, which has been there for a number of decades. We're erecting modern-day pyramids. We're putting up obelisks. We are scattering the emblems of occult philosophy all across our globe. We have been doing this for a long time.
Six recurring.
That's one. There's just so many different things. In Calgary, not that Alberta. On the south side of Calgary, an Egyptian motif. And so there's scarabs, and there's all kinds of Egyptian religious statues. Walk around and observe. I thought to myself, whoever put this up, they knew what they were doing. They knew their Egyptology, not just cultural Egyptology. They knew the esoteric Egyptology. Just the way it was all laid out and brought to bear. But this is just one example of Boyd. Another example. It's a monument toward when we talk about globalization, we automatically this an economy. Institutions like the United Nations, and all that's important. But the underlying principle behind this is a religious ideology, a religious principle. And it kind of, you could almost say it kind of stems right back to the Garden of Eden, Genesis chapter 3, where man determined to do it on his own. And man decided to create his own society. He'll create his own world. And ever since, we haven't liked and we're trying to go back to the Garden of Eden, but we're still trying to build it in our own way. And mankind fails every time. That's the... I've actually written a number of articles on the dreams that we have. And spirituality is an important part of that.
And, of course, you and I were in a debate not too long ago where I tried to bring up some of this, and it wasn't very well received by people who'd never heard it before. You know, and you know, here I am. I was sort of hoping you were going to just pick up. But I don't think you're used to confrontational radio. That was quite an experience. Anyway, be that as it may, we have to understand we really are involved in these spirits of battle. It's being fought on a political battlefield. It's being fought in our schools. And the trouble is, our children are being lured into all of this new spirituality. And that's the reason, of course, they have to destroy their faith in God. That's why they will not allow any mention of God in schools, but it's all right to have evolution taught, which, of course, discredits the Bible. The same thing is happening in our churches. Many of our churches are embracing environmentalism. Oh, we're to be here to be custodians of the earth. Doesn't it say that in the book of Genesis? And of course, then they're joining with the occultists, you know, as far as earth worship and Mother Earth and goddess worship. And these things are going on all the time, and the average person has no idea what's transpiring. well, I guess it's Carl Tykrib, and we're talking about his experience as he begins to start out this odyssey that leads him to begin to question what in heaven's name is going on in your small community. What happened in your community, you know, when it became obvious that you were not going to become a Mason and you were really beginning to beliefs, or at least look into their beliefs?
Well, what ended up happening, ironically, I am receiving a telephone call from an individual down in the U.S. who had met on a number of occasions at different conferences, and that individual is Gary Kaw. And he called and he said, "Carl, we're going to be looking at doing a book project in the fairly near future. Would you be willing to come down to the U.S. and do some work with that?" So we took a look at what that would all entail, and we applied for the proper visas, and we went through all the procedures, which, by the way, is a very taxing and very long and complex process.
Oh, you should have come in from Mexico. It's very easy.
And so we ended up down in the U.S. for a few years, helping him write his book that a number of your listeners would probably recognize, The New World Religion. And I was involved in doing the research on a lot of that material.
And that's an excellent, excellent book. We do carry it, and for our listeners out there, if you haven't read Gary Kaw's The New World Religion, you really need to get it. Go ahead.
So I ended up leaving my small community with a fair percentage of the people here understanding in a marginal sense what I do. I still get asked the question continually, "So, Carl, what exactly do you do for a living?" The easiest thing for myself to say is I'm a writer, without having to go into the long, drawn-out affair of what I write about, who my audience is, and where my clientele may reside. Sometimes you have to be a little bit creative. You don't have to lie, but you have to be sometimes creative. And just when you're, like it is whenever you're going through a customs official or across the border, you give a response to the questions you're asked, but you don't confuse or complicate it with a whole lot of extra stories or going on and on and on about why you're going down or what you're doing, because all you do is you confuse the matter even more. Some people in my community know what I do. Most don't really have a clue. And that was fine. Some of that was couched in just the way I had presented it, the way I had approached it, keeping people, certain people, in the loop, and making sure that others were excluded. Because in this little community, it's kind of the same as it is across all of rural North America. If you don't hear a rumor by 10, you start one. And so, with that in mind, you just have to be careful of how you approach the subject and who you approach it with.
But of course, you know, it sounds so ridiculous. Secret societies have been around for thousands of years. My goodness, I mean, most people would talk about that. That, you know, they would look at the askance. Now, of course, they'll watch television, the story of the medium, you know, Alison Dubois, who of course is a beautiful blonde girl, a woman with a mother with three wonderful children, and she taps into this other world so she can help the district attorney get the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real story. It's really true. It really was an Alison Dubois, and she did live this life, and yet, of course, we can accept that on television, but the fact that there really is another dimension, that people are tapping into that, seems so far from reality when, of course, we were not watching television.
That's right. And the other aspect is, it gets to be in a very emotionally heated topic, because the majority of people involved...
Oh, hold that thought right back. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I had asked Carl, of course, how the people in his community accepted the fact that he was researching the Masonry and the other secret and esoteric societies. And he said, well, of course, most people really don't want to hear about this. And then, of course, we were talking about the television spectacular. You'll see it on coming back, I'm sure, in the fall, The Medium. And it's the story of this beautiful blonde housewife with three beautiful little blonde girls. And she has a job working for the district attorney, and she taps into the other dimension so that she can actually help the district attorney get the bad guys. And I was just commenting, we will watch that program, and we will thrill at it, and it's an exciting program. And every once in a while, you'll see demonstrated these mystical experiences. But if I were to tell you that this is real, that this sort of thing really happens, why you would find it very difficult to believe, even though there are books written by the real Alison DeBlom, who tells about the things she really did do when she was working for the district attorney, you know, helping him catch the bad guys. This is not an imaginary thing. There is another dimension. Certain people tap into it. And some of the most prominent men in the world have tapped into that as the source of their power and their wealth.
And at the local level, it becomes a very emotionally charged topic. And part of the reason is because at the ground level, most men and women involved in some of these more secretive or esoteric societies, such as Freemasonry, most don't really understand what they're involved with. And so for them, why? That's a slap in the face. However, I've had opportunities on a number of occasions to sit down and talk with people. Of course, I'm not giving my side of the story. I'm not looking to cause some type of heated argument. But I've sat down with some very prominent individuals who have been involved with some of these esoteric societies, and they're very, very open. Once you use the right language and the right terminology, they're very open to discuss the fact that yes, this is a very real aspect. This is a very real part that shapes the way they believe and the way they then conduct themselves when they are seeking to change policy, when they're seeking to change the social direction of our culture and our civilization. So it's not just accidental. There is nothing here that's accidental. But the average man on the ground, he goes home and he does what almost everybody else does when they go home after hard days of work. He doesn't sit down and actually study and pursue that which he is supposed to study and pursue. And in Freemasonry, it's the seeking of light. And of course, we're not talking about a physical light. We're talking spiritual light, and we're talking about Luciferic illumination when you get into some of the teachings and the writings of men like Manly P. Hall. But rather, he'll go home, and instead of pursuing the light of the lodge, he will sit with his remote control and his burger and his bottle of whatever favorite beverage it may be. And that's about the extent of his evening's worth of diligence and study. And that's just the way human nature is. We are traditionally lazy by nature.
But of course, it's not until suddenly you get that inspiration to try to seek the truth. And somebody once said, but upon one man's life is it fallen, a light that doth not depart, and a look or a word he hath spoken wrought a flame in another man's heart. And you were suddenly inspired to try to find out what this is going on, and I'm sure you've touched the lives of others, just as I hope I may be able to do the same thing, to light a man in another light a flame in another man's heart. And one by one, we have to try to get people to understand that if you really begin to study the esoteric and the hermetic and the Luciferian and the story of the ancient mysteries as they go into ancient Babylon and they go into ancient Assyria and in the great pyramids and the Egyptology and then, of course, into ancient Greece and Rome and right to this very day, why you begin to understand that this applies to the spiritual battle that's taking place today between good and evil, between God and Satan, between the people who control our government and those who wish to be free.
Well, the thing, Dr. Monteith, that really kind of pushed myself forward was when I sat down and I realized how my own little itty-bitty rural community was being essentially operated or run, particularly from a business point of view, by these individuals who are all members of a lodge, and that my business community decisions or my community direction was being shaped by these individuals, I thought to myself, okay, what about at a larger level? What about regionally, provincially, nationally, internationally? And I come to the conclusion that, and it didn't take long to figure out, that there are power bases. People, organizations, philosophies, all pushing towards similar goals and agendas, maybe from different slightly viewpoints, but they were all pursuing the same common denominator, the same common goals.
And of course, that would be a new world order and a new world religion. That's what it's all about. We're going to be back here in just a moment with Carl Tykrieb and here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Carl Tyke Trieb, and we're talking about the book he helped to do the research for, New World Religions. We carry another book, which Gary Codd written earlier, called The Demonic Side of Globalism, and then another one. What is the first book that he wrote, do you recall?
In Route to Global Occupation.
We actually carry all three of those books. We think they're all so vitally important to an understanding of what's going on today. And are you still working with Gary?
I still do consulting, some research. I edit through his newsletter. I've been involved with him ever since we've come back to Manitoba. And essentially we ended up returning back to Canada because the immigration costs and the procedures for us to upgrade our visa stature was just simply beyond what we could physically do, what we were capable of economically being able to achieve. And so we said, you know, it's maybe time we just pack the bags and we head back north to Manitoba.
Did you ever get a green card here?
I had a particular type of visa called an O visa. And there's a significance with every visa classification. And so I was a recipient of the O visa. But for myself to upgrade to a green card, I couldn't upgrade to just a typical standard worker's green card. It had to reflect that there was actually a progression beyond the O and to a higher stature of a green card. And the costs, the legal fees, the lawyers, the attorneys, all the paperwork, it was mind-boggling. And we had to make a choice. Do we pursue that and have it possibly be rejected and spent thousands of dollars pursuing this for nothing? Or do we return back to Canada and simply pursue it from our own end here as a freelancer, but still working with Gary and working with other men and women across the U.S. and Canada and actually in different spots around the world?
Well, of course, being a writer, making a living as a writer is a tough thing to do, but you write so well and so clearly and concisely, you know, and I would hope that more and more people would have access to your information and really begin to learn from your years of work and experience and research.
Well, thank you. I didn't start off life from high school going into the trade of writing. I actually was road construction for a while and working with senior citizens, etc. But I grew up on a farm. I'm a farm boy. And some people will say, well, you know, you should have gone on to school and become your master's degree and so on and so on. Well, I found that for myself, the thing that really pushes me is to try to actually get involved and to work my way in to different events and organizations where I will have a much broader and much more important learning curve.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Carl Tyke-Trieb. Tyke-Trieb. And basically, Carl, at this point of the program, I would like you to get your web page out and how people could get in touch with you if they wanted to get more of the great information you've written.
Oh, thank you. I've got articles posted on Barrett Choza's web page. That's crossroad.to. My own web page, which isn't really anything spectacular, more than just a holding facility, if you want to use those kind of terms, for my articles. It's at gracesite.net, and that is site as an S-I-T-E, gracesite.net. And if you want to pop over to the August Review, it's www.augustreview.com. I've been involved in a lot of the research on some of those articles, and Pat Wood was kind enough to publish my article on the globalization strategy, which links in American and European integration policies.
Well, now, what does that have to do with what we were talking about, these esoteric and hermetic societies?
That's a very good question, and a lot of people ask that. Where does the link begin, or where does the link start? And it starts actually at a more of a philosophical position than anything else. And the philosophical position is simply that both the political and the religious drive towards a single global system, both of those tracks are looking at creating a man-made utopia. And so they work hand in glove, and you find the same people on both sides of the fence, and many organizations on both sides of the fence, both rushing towards this global governance concept and embracing the religious and the political sides. And so I realized very quick in the work I was doing that while sometimes there may be opportunities to get information and to do the research that I'm doing on the political, and you don't find a religious connection, the philosophy that undergirds it almost always is the same. And that is that we are going to build our own world. And it doesn't matter if you are a member of the Baha'i faith, which firmly believes and actually espouses the idea of a global faith, plus a global government, plus a global currency, plus a global capital, or if you are a member of some other esoteric society, or if you're part of the United Nations and understand what your organization is all about, which is the pursuit of a single global arrangement in the political realm. You always run into the same vein, the same thinking, and that is that we as a society, as a world, we are going to build our own new Babylon. We are going to build our own new world, our own new Eden. And a lot of these people sometimes will even have differences of opinions of how this is to be done, and you'll have a real conflict within some of these events. Like just a few weeks ago I attended the United Nations Habitat World Urban Forum, which had, of course, a political side. But we also had a whole three-hour session on religion and spirituality, where we had Buddhist and Hindu and Muslim and Christian leaders and members from all different sects who talked about how we need to build a new global faith and have cities as the central point where we can have an interfaith connection and help to bring about the political side through the religious side.
And because they want to combine the New World Order with the New World Religion. This is what people really don't understand. And that is why within the Christian church today, the music of the church is changing. The message of the church is changing. And no longer do we have a God, who judges men, sinful men. Oh, no, there's no such thing. As somebody said recently, we've taken a God without wrath, who will bring men without sin into a kingdom without judgment, to Christ without a cross. Mm. And this is really the message of the modern day church. And you go to church and you come out and you feel so good about yourself. Go ahead, Carl.
You're so right. My goodness. Churches are rushing and to embrace some of the very same philosophies that are going to destroy them. Not that long ago, we were involved, my wife and myself were involved in working with a church conference organization that was looking at trying to get the labyrinth concept promoted within their network of churches.
Now, could you explain to our listeners what the labyrinth concept is and why that is significant? I mean, after all, labyrinth, haven't they had those that make them out of hedges or some things of that sort? They've been around for a long time.
Labyrinths have been around for an awful long time. And labyrinths, historically, are always connected with a pagan occult tradition. The first time I ever ran into a labyrinth, Dr. Monteith, was I was at the Theosophical Society headquarters in just in one of the outskirts of Chicago, just outside of Chicago a little ways.
Is that Wheaton, Illinois?
That's right.
Right.
And after a full day of spending time in their library, I went to get a breath of fresh air, and I walked outside, and towards the back of the grounds was a big labyrinth established. It didn't surprise me because I understood the symbolism, the meaning of the labyrinth. Not what the pop culture says it would be, especially the Christian pop culture, which claims that this is somehow a way of reconnecting with Jesus Christ, or reconnecting somehow with the Father, but the real understanding of the labyrinth. And the real understanding of the labyrinth goes back to esoteric philosophy. You are winding through this path of life. You're going through this journey of life. And when you reach the center, you are reaching the point where you understand that you, as an individual, hold the divine essence within yourself. You come face to face not with God, you come face to face with the fact that you are God. That's the actual meaning of the labyrinth. That is the meaning that is explained in esoteric literature. That's the meaning that is explained in historical documentation. In fact, outside of the Christian church, where the labyrinth is still being used continually within pagan circles, they're very open and very honest about it. This is about finding the Christ within you. This is about finding your own divinity.
And, of course, it takes you into meditation and opening up your mind to find the truth. And through meditation, yoga mm-hmm. type of meditation, all of these things are opening up your mind. And you're not focusing on God, the God of the Bible and His Word. Why, of course, you're beginning to look within yourself for that spark of divinity.
I did a large article on the whole issue of the labyrinth, and I had to because of what we were encountering within some of our own church networks. And it's posted on the web. You can find it, I know, Barrett Cho's on her webpage, crossroad.to. I know it's there. I know it's posted on different places around the web. Punch in my name, and it will pop up. Punch in my name with the name Labyrinth attached to it, and it'll pop up in other places.
Would you mind spelling your name? Because nobody will ever be able to spell
it. Nobody will ever get it. I understand. Carl with a C, last name Teichrib, and it's spelled T as in Tom. T-E-I-C-H-R-I-B. B as in boy.
That's it. Pronounced Teichrib, but it's T-E-I-C-H-R-I-B. Go
That's
ahead.
Right. So if people want to punch that my name in that way, it'll pop up. All over the board in places that I don't exactly want it to pop up, but that's just the nature of the web. And in our cut and paste virtual society, it's easy to grab people's material and pop it into different places that you kind of go, I wonder how they got a hold of it or why they have an interest in it. But the Labyrinth article is certainly kicking around, and it's well worth taking a look at, especially if your church is involved in trying to bring across this prayer journey, prayer labyrinth idea.
And, of course, the contemplative prayer and so many of these things, really all tie into this whole occult, yoga type of affair. Would you say that would be true?
No question. We're seeing here is an emergence of mystical Christianity, of Christians who want to experience something. They want a sign and a wonder of some type. They want to experience. And so doctrine no longer becomes of interest. Rather, the experience becomes the focal point. And so that's where we have the contemplative prayer. We have the labyrinth situations. We will embrace all kinds of other, you could say, spiritual gimmicks in order for us to have a more fulfilled experience.
To experience it, we want to experience God. In other words, rather than God's Word and rather than the Bible, we want something more. We want something mystical. We want something magical. And, of course, we're opening ourselves up to true, I believe, possession by demonic spirits. And a lot of people say that's just crazy. Nobody could be possessed by demonic spirits. But are you absolutely certain?
Then that gets right back around to the reality of the situation. And the reality is that the spiritual is as real, if not more, than the physical. And as Christians, we know it. So why do we have a problem with it?
Well, we should know it. That's
we
the thing.
Know it.
It's so
right.
hard, for the average Christian to really believe that there is this other dimension out there, this spiritual dimension, where perhaps this is where the real battles for our souls are fought. But if they're not taught this in our churches, and they're not going to read your writings or my writings or the writings of other people who've looked into this, this is so foreign. And so we can take the medium, we can take all these stories on television about the witches, this good witch and all these things, without realizing that the witches do tap into the other dimension. That's where they get their power from.
And as Christians, we tap into a dimension as well. We tap into the dimension that comes through Jesus Christ. Sacrificial gift on the cross.
Amen to that.
That's exactly. I mean, as a Christian, I am tapping into the supernatural. You are as well. But that supernatural is not something that is, what's the right word to say? It's not something that is mystical and out there and unreachable. It is real and it's tangible. And it reflects the very fact that I, as a human being, am sinful by nature. And then it fixes that problem. I still commit sins, but on a scale where judgment is placed, Christ has taken my penalty for my sins. And that's a recognition then that I have. And understanding that spiritual aspect, then puts a whole new life into me and gives me a completely different idea, a different direction, a different sense of what this world is all about than those who say, I can pay for my sins myself, or I can become a god, or I'll just accept whatever happens. Wow. No, thank you.
And of course, the thing is that people have to recognize that the story of Christianity really is true. And the longer I live, the more I study, the more I'm convinced that the Bible is telling the truth. And these people out there who just sort of scoff at this sort of thing, who think they can do it all with their intellect, I think are in for a very, very big surprise. One of the biggest problems we have, I think, is man's ego, who says, well, don't quite see this, I don't understand this, and therefore it couldn't be true, I've got to see it, I've got to be able to touch it, I've got to be able to... We have to have a rational explanation for things. Well, so much of what's going on today doesn't have a rational explanation.
You know, there's something even a very simple thing that every man, woman, and child can do. Can you rationally explain love? Can you rationally explain joy? Can you rationally explain emotions? An emotion is simply... from what I understand it to be, and I could be mistaken in some regard, emotion is the language of the heart. Can we rationally explain that if those emotions? No, you can't measure, you cannot put on a scale emotions such as joy. You cannot put on a scale for emotions such as grief. Every person experiences those emotions individually, and yet they're tangible. It's real. It actually exists. Nobody will deny that love doesn't exist, or does exist. We all know it's real. And yet, it's not something you can put in a box or package up and sell to people. You can sell sex, but you can't sell love. You can't do that because it's an intangible, yet exceedingly real part of our lives. And for those people who scoff at the idea, at the notion that there is a God in heaven, and that Jesus Christ paid our penalty for our sins because it's not something they can see, feel, or touch, well, their own emotions driving their decision that blind them, which reveals their heart, which is a hardened heart, and your emotions that will come out will reflect that hardened heart. They'll be antagonistic, and they'll be diametrically opposed, and they'll put their feet down firmly and say, no, this can't exist. Their own emotions are showing that there is something that is intangible out there. They're being emotional. How can you be emotional and say that this is not real when your very emotions show are something that is an intangible act, yet very much a part of your life? I don't know, I was kind of a big spin-off, I understand, but it's a small thing, and yet we overlook it.
Amen.
We overlook the fact that we have an incredible Creator and an incredible God, and we were created beautifully and wonderfully, and it all reflects the fact that that God, that Creator, Jesus Christ, is on the throne. We simply try to say no to it in every way, shape, and form, even when the evidence is right in your face.
Yes, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And really, of course, as a physician, I still marvel at the perfect mechanics of the human body, which I used to work with so intimately, you know, reconstructing joints. But I could never do anything quite as good as God could do. And of course, if you follow the story of civilization down through the ages, and there has always been this drive to create a one world government, whether it would be in ancient Babylon under Nimrod or under the pharaohs or certainly Alexander the Great in, you know, 300 or 400 BC and certainly in Rome and Great Britain. And then, of course, today, of course, the major impetus behind this is the United States. And what people really don't understand is we have troops in 130 nations throughout the world. Mm-hmm. Oh, do we have troops in 130 nations? Because we're protecting ourselves against the wicked Osama bin Laden who's living in a cave? No. We have troops in 130 nations because we are moving towards a world government, and they're using the financial and military power of the United States to further that goal, but they can't tell the American people what's really going on.
There's a couple of books that were written in the 1940s by Clarence Straight, and he was very formative in understanding how NATO would be coming about. He made it clear that Britain and America were probably the two nations on Earth that were probably the most successful examples of pushing towards a single world government.
Clarence Straight, yes. Union Now was one of the books he wrote. I remember that.
That's right. Yep.
Well, we're just about out of time. Anyway, our guest has been called Ty Cribben, and we're talking about this, the New World Religion. So that's Gary Kaw's book, which, of course, Carl did a great deal of research on. And I don't know whether he's around with the demonic roots of globalism, which we still carry, but en route to global occupation. Gary's done a wonderful job getting information out. You probably want to be getting his newsletter as well as ours. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Carl, we have 3 minutes for you to wrap up this evening's program.
Oh, we said a lot in these in the last 60 minutes, that's for sure. Probably the thing that sticks in my mind is, in the course of what we've been discussing here, is that we have a God who sits on a throne that we, as humankind, want to somehow rise above, and we want to put ourselves on our own throne. We no longer fear God. And we find that all through the books of Psalms, Proverbs, and Ecclesiastes. In fact, the last chapter of Ecclesiastes, chapter 12, sums it all up when the writer states that the fear of God is the final conclusion. We need to fear God and obey His commands. Bottom line, for us as Christians, we know that is the paramount, that is the paramount goal that we need to pursue. But in a world where we no longer fear God, where we want to put ourselves on the throne, where we say that we can become God, well then, what holds us back from becoming, if you want to use a more vulgar term, what holds us back from becoming deified animals, where all we do is rape, pillage, and plunder for our own benefit, our own good, because after all, there's nobody higher than you as an individual. And this is something that I've discussed with different people, who really hold that they are a god, or that they have this god spark within them. And they scratch their head, and they have a hard time with that, because they want to work within a social constraint where there's moralities and ethics. But how can there be morality and ethics if you're God? Then you form your own morals, your own ethics. And you don't have to worry about what society wants or doesn't want. Of course, it's not logical. But how can we have been so illogical in so much of what we think and do? We have big, big egos. And those big, big egos want to be stroked. And we want to put in place a big, big world with our own visions of how it should be. Every time we do that, we run into the same problem, where we end up making a utopian society that collapses into bloodshed and fear and control and chaos. And historically, that's proven over and over and over again. Dr. Monteith, we're now pursuing the exact same thing, except on a global scale. It's not just the Russian experiment. It's just not just the South American experiment. It's not just the European experiment. It's certainly not just North America's experiment. It's a global experiment bridging politics and religion into a new global society.
All right, fine. Well, I think you've said it all there. Sort of like deja vu all over again, isn't
That's
it?
That's exactly right.
We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest has been called Ty Cribben. I hope many of you will even want to get copies of this program and play it over a number of times. And so we have some conversations, of course, when we have our breaks for advertisements. You need to get Carl's wisdom. And then, of course, you can go to Barrett Schoes's website. That would be crossroad.to, and of course you can go up on the internet and pull down his articles. We hope many of you want to get Gary Kaw's book, which we still carry, The New World Religions, and of course The Demonic Roots of Globalism and En Route to Global Occupation. Carl, thank you very much for being with us. I hope we can get you back again sometime soon.
Well, thank you for the opportunity once again, Dr. Montes.
God bless and bye-bye.
Have a good night.
Okay. Well, that was Carl, and of course, it's getting rather late. And where Carl is, he's on Eastern Time, but good enough to be with us here. And ladies and gentlemen, we are truly involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, and most people have no idea about the other dimension, what's really going on. If you want to get a glimpse of this, you need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need, of course, to get our pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. We put together three pamphlets based upon 09, about 12 newsletters. Each pamphlet's about 40 pages. They're rather inexpensive. You want to get the three pamphlets, I think $9.95 plus shipping. But we'll give you real insight into this other dimension we talk about. And then, of course, you want to get our four-tape set on the supernatural, the story of a medium, Johanna Michelson, who witnessed these wonderful, miraculous, supernatural things until she suddenly realized one day it was all demonic. And, of course, she began to check it out and realized with horror what she was involved in. And, of course, you can get her book. It's called The Beautiful Side of Evil. We have a great deal of information that you're not going to get elsewhere, taking you into the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 4-hour, the 3-hour, the 10-hour versions of that. That has changed many, many lives. Chris Pinto's wonderful videos, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, and we recommend both of them. Actually, we are in Megiddo 2 for a few minutes as we try to talk about this spiritual value. The spiritual battle. Chris Pinto's award-winning The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning got the New York Film Critics number one award, Film Festival's number one award, is being seen at the Tahoe Film Festival here in the latter part of August. This is probably the best single instrument we have to begin to educate you about the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. It's entitled The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. They're all available from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you're looking at what's happening in the Middle East today, it really doesn't make any sense. Hezbollah is doing everything they can to aggravate Israel. Israel's doing everything they can to aggravate Hezbollah. It's really, of course, a battle between Israel and Iran. And when that comes down, why, of course, we're going to be caught right in the middle. And our boys will be trapped in Iraq. And just pray that they, of course, bring in some sort of troops to stop this or get some sort of a ceasefire. And I'm not certain it's going to happen. We'll just have to wait and see. But there is the potential here for a much larger war. And as I read what the premier, or president of Israel, is saying today, it's so reminiscent of what Sir Edward Grey was saying to Parliament back in 1914 to justify bringing Great Britain into a needless, senseless carnage that ended up killing over 21 million people and, of course, injuring twice that many. And many of them were American boys. Totally unnecessary. The war was unnecessary. It was all contrived, and it's like deja vu all over again. But you can't understand any of this unless you understand that World War One was contrived and World War Two was contrived and Vietnam and Korea and the first Gulf War and what we're in now, it's Vietnam all over again. Ladies and gentlemen, learn what's going on. Go to our website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And then, of course, certainly you get the books, get the videos, get the information, pray for America, pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.